got your back.
You got to give it up.
Well, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show, and you are listening to episode number 22. I had an especially good time sitting down and recording today's episode. It was with Joel Cooper, a comedian. This was my first time meeting Joel. He's based out of Mesa, Arizona. And I traveled down to Tempe to sit down at Nick's New York Pizza with Joel. Also sitting in today was Dan, the Brit comedy doc Nightingale. He's a friend of mine and a past guest of this show. The two of them were just about to get ready to hit the road and travel down to Southern Cal and up the California coast for a two-man tour for them to try out some new material, stretch their muscles, and work on bolstering up their acts. They are in the process of that tour right now as we're posting this. They're in the middle of it. And in the course of this week and a half or so that they're on the road, they will be hitting some of the historic, iconic, world-famous comedy clubs that you and I are both familiar with. The Comedy Store down in Southern Cal, the Ice House, again, home to some of the biggest comedy names in the industry. So we hope they are having a good time. And when they return in a week or so, we will all get a chance to see the fruits of their labor when they both participate in the New Faces of Comedy at Stand Up Live on West Jefferson Street in Phoenix, Arizona. That's going to be on May 21st, an 8 p.m. show, and it should be a great time. Again, they're polishing up some of their material on the road. We'll have some great road stories, no doubt, worked into their acts. Again, Stand Up Live, May 21st at 8 p.m. at Stand Up Live in Phoenix, Arizona. Jump on Joel Cooper's Facebook page, Joel Cooper Comedian, or Dan the Brit Comedy Doc Nightingale's Facebook pages, and you can download free tickets to that May 21st show. So check them out. It should be a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode, again, recorded at Nick's New York Pizza. Find them online at nicksnypizza.com. They're located on University Drive, just downstairs of the Tempe Improv. So plan a trip down there, grab some great food and drink at Nick's, and then pop upstairs for some of the greatest comedy in the state at the Tempe Improv. Hope you enjoy the episode. This is Joel Cooper and Dan, the Brit Comedy Doc Nightingale. First off, thanks for taking time. I am running. I try to be early to most stuff because for my jobs, I gotta lug stuff, whether it be this or camera gear. So now I'm running, what is it, about 45, 50 minutes late. So thanks for
I actually am not counting, but it's about 48
minutes. Yeah.
And 37 seconds.
So first thing I noticed walking in, helmet, what do you ride?
Scooter. Electric.
A Vespa. Yeah.
No, I have a Suzuki Katana.
Gotcha. So. Those things are some of the fastest production bikes.
I wish it was faster. I get a little wood, but I don't get much.
650. Yeah. My brother-in-law's got a... Do they make a 1300? I think they might. Of that Katana, I think. I'm not sure,
actually,
though.
They do make
Yeah, he's got a big old sucker. 14, yeah. And when he got it... Is that what it... Yeah, when he got it, I think it was like at the time that he's had it for a few years. It's probably got 1,500 miles on it, tops. Wow. Sits in his garage. At the time, I think that was like the fastest production bike they
made. The Hayabusa 1300 is one of the most dangerous fast bikes, 240, 250 miles an hour.
I've got a, it's basically a Lazy Boy with two wheels. I can sit back. I got a Cowie Vulcan 2000cc.
Oh, right on.
It's nice. It's a big cruiser.
Takes
Oh, it's relaxing. It's nice and smooth.
When the weather's nice.
Yeah, I was hoping to bring that down today, and if that was the case, I would have been a half hour early.
Yeah.
But it was drizzly up there. When I say down, we're at what are we at? Nick's New York Pizza in Tempe, Nick's right next to the Tempe and Brock.
Nowhere near New York, but we're in New York. Know,
it's and it's close enough.
And we had a Philly pizza.
Philly.
So go figure that one.
I had a buddy of mine owned a bar in San Francisco, and he had been there. The guy looked to be in his 50s. He was probably 70 at the time, Guamanian dude. Frank's 21 Club, little plug-in for Frank's. I spent a lot of nights in that joint. Yeah. Right in the corner of Turk and Taylor, the heart of the Tenderloin. And when they would film stuff in San Francisco way back when, the streets of San Francisco, you know, Carl Malden or like
Clint
some
Eastwood.
Of the some of the Dirty Harry movies, Clint Eastwood stuff. Whenever they wanted to show like San Francisco's Skid Row, they would always show a shot of the sign at Frank's 21
really?
Club. Oh, it was like a really divey place.
We're on the map.
But a great spot. Yeah. But Frank knew everything.
How funny.
He knew all the restaurants, all the great delis, every dive bar, everything. And we were out there with some buddies one time, this was years ago. We just stuck our head in, had a couple of pops. I said, "Hey, Frank, we want to go get some Chinese food. Where's that? Where's the, you know the best spots. Where's the best Chinese food in San Francisco?" He goes, "All right, this is where you got to go to Japantown for Chinese food. Go to Japantown. It's a restaurant owned by Koreans, and they got the best Mexican chef you're ever going to." And it was. It was the best Chinese food I had ever had. But it was in Japantown, owned by Koreans with a Mexican chef, and it was dynamite.
Well, it's the only place you can get your food with a 44 Magnum. The most powerful handgun in the world.
And you guys, before we go too far off, sitting with Joel Cooper and then Dan Nightingale, who has been with us a couple times before. Give us a plug in. Where can folks see your schedules? Look at what you're going. Your web, social media, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you got. Tell me where they can find you.
Anybody can look me up under Comedian Joel Cooper under Facebook, Google Plus. I post all my scheduling on there so that everybody knows when I'm going to be in town or performing
and wherever.
My next show will be May 21st at Stand Up Live in downtown Phoenix.
Stand Up Live, that's on Jefferson, right?
It is on Jefferson, 50 West Jefferson. It's right across from the Diamondbacks ballpark
and really beautiful close facility. To the bowling alley and Walgreens, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think Walgreens.
Yeah. Actually, the bowling alley's right there. You can get a double stamp for your parking pass,
so you can go in, watch some comedy, have a few drinks at Copper Blues, go to the bowling alley, meet a girl, go next door and get the penicillin,
get your balls cleaned.
Jeez. And Dan, where do we see Dan? Where can we get all the info on Dan and his hair updates?
Okay. Yeah, my hair updates, you can always find those on Facebook. Facebook.com/BritsComedyDoc. You can go on my website, which is BritsComedyDoc.com. And Matt sat here shaking his head.
Purple fan. Every time I see you, you've got a different color hairdo. The other day, Friday, it was hot pink. It had been hot pink for a while. I guess you got tired of the.
That's right.
Tired of the pink. Now, what do you call it? What color is that?
This is quite simple and straightforward. Purple,
not the back
with blue mixed into it.
Straightforward purple
print, except
with
for
blue.
With
purple
blue.
And blue. Is it? That's
and then the green. Well, that's the shade of everybody looking at it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. The reason we're sitting down with you guys, one, to have a little fun. Hear about some of the shows you got coming up. Now, when this airs, will be day three-ish of your California swing through. Where are you guys going to be? Dan's pulling up the calendar there. But, Joel, you did some of the booking.
Correct.
I think you start San Diego. Is that correct?
Start San Diego at Winston's Ocean Beach Comedy Club.
So you'll be in a day or so in there by the time this airs.
Yeah.
So most of our listeners are our locals, Prescott and all that. What are you? You're going through San Diego, doing a couple shows there.
And
let's
LA,
look through that list.
We're doing three shows in San Diego.
Joel needs his glasses on.
Yeah, I need more than glasses. I need
his age.
Bifocals.
That's not funny. That's what I'm
doing. It's the memory that I'm glad for. I would be in prison if I didn't forget my. You know, what were we talking
again?
About?
What?
We'll be doing Winston's Ocean Beach Comedy Club, and then we'll be doing Comedy Store in La Jolla.
Oh, cool.
We're doing a Madhouse and then the Comedy Palace in San Diego. And then we'll be moving to L.A. for one night doing the Ice House, then up to Santa Cruz doing a nice, quaint place called Blue Lagoon.
Blue Lagoon in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz is a beautiful, beautiful area. I grew up not far from there. And that was a spot we used to go to on a regular basis for family and just for fun, hanging out at the beach. Real funky little town, and still has that flavor.
It looks like it. I've never been there, but I've been kind of checking it out. Looks like it's got that history to it.
It was the quintessential surfer town in the 60s. Mm-hmm. It was a cross mix of the surf rats. And a retired community, so it was a really
sounds like we no, look like a cross between. It was surfers. We've got a surfer's body, yeah, and a retired
surfer's hair. I got the retirement look.
That's only surfer's hair if it was really cold water and just turned him. But it was just a really weird mix of a bunch of kids and hippies running around, you know, tooling around at the beach, and then
so it's like the Jim Jones.
Yeah, just a little bit. But it was a great spot. Now, you're hitting some really historic comedy spots. Comedy Store, mm-hmm. That's La Jolla.
Yeah,
And obviously, most folks know the Comedy Store, the Hollywood Comedy Store, but their history of who they have there. A lot of people don't know of the history of the Ice House. It's not as well-known.
Right.
But in the comedy community, that is one of the premier best spots to perform.
It is.
And it's got a great history. It's just not as touted. It's not as well known.
As a comedian, it's one you definitely want to have on your resume. Yeah. But to the open public, it's just, what? Ice House? What? Where is that?
It's historic. They've got the biggest names going through that place.
They do.
And some of the best audiences.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah. Well, no, that's one of the things that I've heard from listening to podcasts of different comedians and talking to some of the ones that I know, is there's certain rooms, Ice House being one, Comedy Works in Denver another one, where the audiences go knowing they're going to get top shelf comedy.
Right.
But it's also rooms where guys get to try some new things out, so they're not necessarily going to hear the hits,
right?
You know, so you get a chance to stretch those muscles and work out some routines and stuff. So it's
I'm too old to stretch out any muscles.
But we're going to La Jolla, La Jolla.
Maybe
it's a different club. I don't
know. And
we'll be coming
don't
back.
They speak English in England? What's wrong with this guy, man?
I don't even know where they get their
J O L L A.
La Jolla.
There's no H in that. There's no L in it.
Guacamole.
So when you guys come back, you're coming back for the 21st. Is that what you said, May 21?
Yeah, we'll be back on the 17th.
We're both playing on the 21st at Stand Up Live.
At where?
Stand Up Live. We're both
Stand Up.
We're
both of you in the Phoenix one.
Stand Up Live.
Yeah, I don't speak
translator.
Man,
and that's spelt Stand Up Live.
I can't tell if that subtitles running under your chin or the numbers from your booking photo.
Yeah.
So you guys,
we'll do the funnies.
Do you typically? Well, I'm waiting. Do you guys typically? I know Dan's gone up Nevada recently. He went back home to the UK and got some stage time there, hit some mics. Joel, how are you primarily based in the Mesa Phoenix area? Do you get a chance to travel around much?
Actually, I am based in the Mesa Phoenix area. I am actually just now expanding to go start traveling. I mean, when I started comedy, I kind of started at the top instead of building my way up. So it was kind of a hard learning process to have to start back down and come back up. So
now that sounds like a problem a lot of people would enjoy having. Hey, I had to start at the top. But in an industry
in an art form where paying your dues is really necessary. When you say you started at the top, what was that? What were you doing? What were some of your first gigs?
Well, my very first three gigs that I ever did, one was I opened for Pablo Francisco, I opened for Margaret Cho, and then I did a BET special. So those were my very first three.
How did you stumble into that? How did that happen?
It just all kind of fell into place, which is weird because it was actually like 20 years ago that I was sitting at a bar with a buddy of mine, and I was just telling jokes, being goofy, and had everybody laugh, and next thing you know, everybody was sitting at our table. The owner came over and said, "Hey, do you know that we have stand-up comedy here tonight?" And I said, "No."
And where was this?
This is actually in Tempe at Minderbinders. The original Minderbinders.
Minderbinders, is that still around?
Yeah, actually, they just reopened it. They reinvented it and reopened it. But I said, no. And he said, well, the comedian said that if you'll open for him, we'll pay for your tab all night. And I was like, that's stupid, yeah. Cuervo 1800s, keep them coming. I was like, they were better off paying me $100, you know, or whatever, because yeah. I know the tab was already more than that. And it ended up being Pablo Francisco. And so I opened for them, and I did good. Well,
biggest names in club comedy.
Yeah. And
he's huge.
He asked me actually afterwards if he could use a couple of my jokes. I'm sure, man, go ahead. And then for the time after that, I just kind of went on hiatus. Got married, you know, which obviously the leash gets shorter, and wasn't allowed to do much. And then after I got divorced, I said, you know what, I think I'm gonna go back to comedy and see what I can do. And I mean, the very next show was opening for Margaret Cho.
And
I just submitted.
Elaborate on that. Where was she at? Down here?
No, it was in Oklahoma City. And I just submitted for it. And they assistant contacted me back and said.
You say submitted. What'd you say at this point? What year was this?
This was 2009.
You submitted something digitally? Did you have to send them a VHS
them a video.
Or
yeah,
something?
Just a video. And I did all my communication with her assistant, and next thing you know, I'm opening the show for her, which, for most people that don't know, she's not a guy like her. So it's, you know.
But at this point, this was when she was way up.
Yeah,
she still is. But she had hit.
She's still a big name.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was definitely in her prime.
On the rise, some cable specials she had. Was this just coming off of her sitcom, I think?
I think it was before her sitcom.
Was it before? Yeah, but there's only been, and currently there's one fresh off the boat, also
right.
Based on some comedians' work and experience, but there's only been two or three network sitcoms with the main focus being Asian Americans, and she was, I think, the first one. She was huge, yeah.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, she was a bit, I mean, It was a big step for me. I mean, I was like, holy cow. And then the very next one, which came in later in 2009, was I contacted a club here in Phoenix called Club Central that they were BET affiliated. And I just called and talked to the guy, and he had just spoke to an MC and had just decided to do a BET special there. And I had just kind of called right at the right time. I mean,
just perfect timing.
Yeah,
perfect.
I mean, couldn't have been any better. And I mean, I went there. I was the only white person there. It was an experience. I mean, before the thing, I actually ended up performing there every week for about 4 months.
Wow.
And you know, it was the same thing. You know, who's that cracker? Who's that cracker? Who's that cracker? But it was cool because they gave me material when I got up there.
That and you were definitely unique.
Yeah.
It wasn't you weren't going to get lost in the crowd in a club like that.
Yeah. They would definitely know when the white guy was missing. Where did he go? But yeah, I used it in my comedy because that's how I would break the ice. I'd get up there and I would tell him, "Yeah, I'm a cracker, but I'm a Ritz. I am no saltine, and everything tastes better on a cracker, ladies." And then by then, you know, they would all start laughing. And by the time I was done, they would come up to me, "Man, you're fine, effing funny," you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was a great place to perform. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It was a challenge, and yet it was kind of felt more homey to me than some of these other clubs.
The pluses of being in the right place, right time.
Timing is
and
definitely
being able to show off your talent that it sounds like you at the time you didn't even know you had. It was kind of stumbled into it. The benefits of that, being able to start and watch these established comedians and work in good rooms, what were some of the things that you were able to take away from that?
You know, to be perfectly honest, not a whole lot. I mean, because when you get to that level, you're a whole different species. I mean, it's not something that you can really consume and take in and immediately use. I mean, and I was told by most of them, it'll take you a couple of years to develop an actual good comedy set. And I was thinking, you know, I don't think so. I mean, I got pages and pages of jokes. But it did. I mean, it literally, almost to the date, I mean, 2 years in, you know, is probably when I really had a real good set that I was real comfortable with.
And,
I mean,
and that's fairly quick. I know guys are like, you know, 10 years is when they feel like, okay, I'm a comedian now. This is
where
I've hit my drive.
It took Kevin Hart over 20 years to make it as a comedian. 20 years. And being involved in that industry and performing all the time.
Yeah.
It takes a long time. And at my age, I don't have that long, so I'm trying to cut some corners.
And that was my... I'm guessing we're probably fairly close in age, which...
35?
I'm 32. and I don't even remember 30. Yeah. Literally do not remember 32. I'm 50.
I'm 46.
46? Yeah. Ah, I got you. Yeah. Young
so,
kid,
yeah, you're,
man.
You're ancient.
49.
I remember when pterodactyls flew, too.
Yeah. I only do because I remember the Flintstones when it was first run, not in reruns.
You're all so old.
Sheesh. Where's that? What
in our
you
country.
On? Which one am I turning off?
Yeah. Of course, he's older, but he shows it.
Fairly close, within a few years, which, and what I'm getting at is it's... fairly late in the game to start.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
absolutely.
Guys who have typically started right out of high school, in college, right out of college, and then, you know, gone through the club circuit and the bar circuit. Going through, you did start a little later than the average. The good thing about that is you had something to talk about. A lot of these young kids don't, you know, what are they drawn from?
Yeah.
You know, where are they drawing their comedy from? Begs the question, what were you doing up until then, other than sitting at a bar drinking 1800?
Actually, well, even after that, I mean, I've had a lot of really cool jobs. I mean, I played professional baseball for the Oakland A's and the Colorado Rockies.
Slow down. We got to get to that. That's I had heard rumors about that. I wasn't sure. Big A's fan.
Really?
I grew up 15 miles out of Oakland, and that's where we went to go watch ball games, was the Oakland Coliseum. They had their farm league in the Modesto A's, which we got a chance to go to every once in a while. But we were, as kids, green and gold. That's
what
we played.
I was actually with their AAA farm team in Washington, Seattle at the time.
Yeah.
It was Tacoma Tigers, which is now the Tacoma Rainiers, which is now Seattle-based.
Yeah.
But, I was with Mark McGuire, you know, played on the same team.
Nice.
That was back in the day, man. That was 1990.
We grew up – we have somewhere squirreled around in my mom's box of stuff is a photo of me sitting on Charlie O, which was the donkey that Chuck Finley, the owner in the 70s, used to have grazing in the outfield behind the fence in the bullpen. I was 5 or 6, you know, in 1969-70, and that's what I'm sitting on. That's where we went as kids. That's where my dad used to score free tickets from work, and we grew up watching Jackson, Sal Bando, Campanaris, all
you
those guys.
You want to hear something crazy? When I was a kid, I grew up in Oklahoma, but I was born in Mesa. We actually walked. We lived right down the street from the Oakland A's spring training facility, which was on University and like Center.
Yeah.
I to this day, I still don't know exactly how my family knew him or whatever, but Joe Rudy.
Oh, yeah.
Was a friend of the family. And I mean, I was 2-3 years old, and he would take me, put me in the dugout. And I would be in there with Reggie Jackson, Raleigh Fingers, you know, Vida Blue, all these guys.
Spring training.
Yeah. And I would be sitting there just like, hey. And my dream was to be a bat boy. That was my dream. I couldn't wait to where I could run out and get the bats. But
well,
I never
you
got
you
to
You had to wait until
that,
you were bigger than the bat.
I was too little for that, yeah.
So what was, once you got, you know, school age and in school, was playing ball something you wanted to do?
It was just the way of life, man. I mean, it was, you know, you didn't even have to think about it. It just...
When did you go from Arizona to Oklahoma?
I went in, like, 1980.
Okay, so you are you were junior high at that time?
Yeah.
Late elementary, yeah. Almost junior high. Yeah. Were you playing ball, that little league,
all,
school,
yeah,
all that?
The way up, yeah.
What'd you play? What position?
Shortstop.
Shortstop, yeah, was that shortstop. That was your position?
Yeah.
Yeah, who were some of your on-field idols?
I like in the A's growing up, some of my favorite players were on the Dodgers. My favorite player of all time, for some reason, I don't know why, he didn't even play my position, but was Steve Garvey.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I love Steve Garvey.
All-American Steve
Garvey,
yeah. He was a cool
guy. Popeye had the big forearms. Yeah. You know, he was a good-looking dude, and he wore my number, 6. That's where I got my baseball number from. So, yeah, he was my idol. I liked the early Dodgers and the A's, and even their early Astros, you know, back in the day.
Big orange stripes going across
big
their chest.
You know, the kind you get at the gas station.
So when did you get your first taste of upper echelon ball? Were you playing club ball out of high school, or did you college ball?
I went to college, to Oklahoma University, for a semester, and I wasn't ready for college. You know, I mean, you go from high school where you pretty much do whatever you want to a pretty disciplined organization, and I was not ready for that. So they basically told me, you pay for your scholarship or you have to leave. And I said, let me, how much is it? As I'm reaching in my pocket, how much is that?
See, I got beer money or college. I guess I'm going to get a six pack.
I guess I'm getting a 40 and I'm going to go get drunk. But I got contacted right away by the Oakland A's from a scout that they had in their organization that had been watching
me.
And again, kind of a timing thing. I mean, he contacted me. He wasn't like I applied for it, but
they'd seen you playing at the college?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just a luck thing. I mean, you know, they had me go out and try out at spring training, and I made their AAA team. And
down here in Arizona training? Yeah. What were you hitting in college? What was your batting average?
My batting average was .340.
Whoo!
Yeah. I was a hitter.
Yeah, they were looking at you for a shortstop. That's great.
I had 4 home runs total.
Yeah, we're losing Dan. It's like cricket, but better.
Yeah.
How do you score goals?
But men.
Yeah.
Men
it's cricket for men.
How do you score goals in this game?
You don't. You just run.
Well, usually it's the blonde sitting in the bleachers. Yeah. But no, we're off track.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a lot of those home runs.
So
you busted bats.
You're smoking the ball in college, and at a shortstop, typically, at least from my as a spectator point of view, correct me if I'm wrong, shortstops are usually sought after for their gloves and their speed. Usually,
Their batting average is usually .250 to .280. It's not.
So you were smoking, and you always were shortstop. They didn't move you around too much.
I started as catcher. It's kind of funny, in Arizona, I mean, we're going way back and not live on my youth by any means.
It's the only thing I can live on.
Yeah.
And that's not much.
I'm trying to cling to it, but it's like static.
You almost have a gold memory, Matt.
I played catcher in what's called the minor leagues in the Little League here, which were 8 and 9-year-olds.
Then you went
to the majors, which was 10, 11, and 12. I played catcher at 8 years old, and a coach from the majors went to the Little League and said, this kid's too good. He needs to be up with the bigger kids.
Moving.
Yeah. And so I was the first kid ever to go from at 9 years old to play in the majors that were 10, 11, and 12. I made All-Stars all 4 years, but was only allowed to play the last 2 years because they have to get the kids into play.
Yeah.
So, it was an experience. But then I switched to shortstop. I think I just did that because of a mental issue or something. I don't know. I was just like, I don't want to play catcher no more.
Yeah, so. I mean, you're obviously involved in every play of the game, basically. But especially in the upper levels, the catcher is kind of governing things on the field.
They're the control caller,
But it's not what you would call one of the glamour positions.
No.
You know, it's just not. And shortstop is that's the hot spot, man.
There's a lot of good shortstops that have been out there. Ozzie Smith. I mean, you can even go back to Cheater. I mean, I'm sorry, Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah, Rodriguez. Yeah. See, I was. That's because we'll explain it to you later, Dan.
Yeah, the Britain. Do you have people in cricket that don't perform enhancing drugs other than Viagra?
Well, look at his arms. What do you think he's using, man? He's the only juiced up therapist I know.
You know what he's using? He's using the shake weight.
That's not funny.
Are there controversies in UK sports in football? And I use that term so reluctantly. Soccer.
In acting class.
No, is there controversies with performance enhancing steroids and stuff in football, cricket, and whatever else they play?
Not so much. In European,
play by the book.
In European football, in Europe, there is.
Is that now? And in rugby, European football, is that what we would call rugby?
No, just football, soccer.
Okay,
but at European just a different level, league, rather than just in the English
where they're
league.
Good.
Where they're good, yeah, you know.
I know nothing about our own sports here in this country, let alone outside the country.
Yeah, I think cycling is the biggest controversy with the enhancing drugs.
Not for preparation
cycling.
H.
That's not performance enhancing.
So, yeah, not so much so.
Performance inflaming.
Yeah. So, what was it like going up as a kid from the outskirts of the Phoenix area, then in Oklahoma, and now you're Pacific Northwest, getting paid to play? What was that like the first couple times?
You know, it's funny because a lot of times people tell me, they go, you know, you should be grateful for the level you reached and stuff, because I'm not, in a way. I didn't go there to play at that level and stay there. You know, I went to play at that level and continue
and
advance to the professional league and play in the show. And I didn't get there. So for myself, I failed. You know, I didn't fulfill my dreams or what I set out to do. But I mean, I do understand and I do appreciate the opportunities I had. I mean, it was a great thing, and it was what I grew up doing. I didn't know anything else.
Yeah,
you know, sports was all I knew. So,
what was the road like for you guys? Where did you travel around to in that?
We traveled all
was that the Pacific Coast?
Yeah,
Pacific PCL, Coast League,
yeah, PCL, and traveled on bus and good experiences. I mean, they're good things. The stories you get to tell. It's great for young people if you're single. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many
players.
This is
a family podcast, so let's keep it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's funny because I'm talking about the reason why a lot of these guys quit, because of their families.
Yeah.
They couldn't afford, you know, $800 a month or, you know, $1,000 with their per diem to maintain a family. I mean, and I'm telling you right now, some of the ball players that I've seen quit the game for financial reasons are better than the ball players that you see in all-star games right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the best players ever play the game are not playing the game.
Circumstances didn't allow them to stick it out. Absolutely. And stick around. Yep. Yeah.
I mean, and people don't think about that. They see these players now and they, oh, that guy's amazing. But I'm telling you right now, there were players that would blow them out of the water that just,
any good road stories on back of the bus shenanigans?
No. No.
Nothing you can share?
I plead the fifth. You said it's a family.
Well, what I was getting at is how well did that prepare you for 2 weeks on the road with the purple-headed Brit?
I'm getting ready to turn him into a madman. That hair color is going to be...
You hear that, Kathleen?
Like
he's coming back. He's coming back. A new man.
Yeah, and I just don't hate me, Kathleen.
But on the serious side, how were some of those bus rides going? Because, you know, it's not like... And I'm not trying to diminish what you guys are going to do, but you're going to be doing this in a car, right? You're taking your vehicle. You'll be on the road. Mm-hmm. You're going to drive for hours on end to get to somewhere. In some cases, probably go directly on stage, finish out a show at midnight or later, catch a couple of Z's when you can, get back in the car and go. It can be grueling, and especially keeping your mind sharp, but when you're doing the same thing in a bus with 15, 20 other guys, and then having to go out in the hot sun and play a very physical game for 3 hours, and what were some of those bus rides and those nights like? Was it
if it's like anything on stage, because he sleeps on stage, so he does get his sleep.
I'm narcoleptic. Put a glove on me and stand me up out there. Buses are not comfortable. The minor leagues get everything handed down.
Yeah.
So it's very low budget
you know, as cheap as they can be. And what a lot of people don't know is that in the locker rooms, the visitors' dugouts and lockers are made to be very inconvenient and very uncomfortable.
Give you that home field advantage.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's to take them out of any way they can. So when you get there, there's hardly anywhere to sit. There's hardly anywhere to put your stuff. I mean, they make it as inconvenient and as uncomfortable as possible. And it is a fact.
Yeah.
I mean, you go in the homes in the home locker room, and it's like it's leather like, recliners and TVs and
whirlpools.
Yeah. And you go in the other one, and it basically looked like wood boxes and just set up for kids' rooms. It's funny, but there's a lot of the players. A lot of them are really good guys, man. I mean, they're pretty good guys. A lot of I won't say his name. The home run leader all time in
Arizona,
San Francisco.
He is ASU, wasn't he?
I loved him. He was a very friendly guy, I'll tell you that. He deserves all the credit he's getting. He's not one of my favorites. Ken Griffey Jr., fantastic guy.
Photographer
man.
Now, isn't he? I think. Yeah, I think he's
selfies?
Doing sports. No, I think he's doing sports photography now.
Is
him
he?
And
I didn't know that.
Him and Randy Johnson.
Really?
Johnson's, yeah, he's
well,
a compliment.
Shit, Randy gets a great aerial shot.
Yeah, yeah, without a helicopter. Yeah,
he just stand there and put it over. But yeah, I mean, I watched Robin Ventura and Barry Bonds duke it out in the batting cage behind the. Behind the outfield.
But that was when he had a normal size head.
Yeah.
He wasn't all bulked up like Brit Comedy Dino.
Yeah, he wasn't all buffed up. He was going for that record.
Famous, made it to major leagues or not, who was a player that you saw that just blew you away?
As in talent?
Talent, yeah.
Who?
And like you said, not all the greats are playing.
Yeah.
That'd be Pelé, wouldn't it?
What? Did you say something?
Hey, rewind that. We can get the subtitles going again.
You get out
where
that
where was he? Cosmo? No.
Was he Cosmo? Yeah, he was. Yeah.
You know, and
say
to be,
he knows.
No, I can't to pick one person.
Anybody?
Out,
no.
I can't think of someone just right off. I mean, there were a lot of good players. I mean, a lot of good young players that were extremely talented. I mean, guys that could throw the ball from the fence to the plate on a line shot. They could be faster than anybody you've ever seen, but a lot of wasted talent too.
Yeah,
you know.
How long were you doing the grind?
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah,
what brought you out of it?
Injury.
To what?
My rotator cuff.
My rotator cuff.
Yeah. I was with the Oakland A's for 2 years. When Colorado started putting together their team, the Rockies in '92, I was traded there. I was there till '94.
Do you remember who you were traded for? Was it anybody that made it? No?
I have no idea.
No.
Yeah.
Just
was,
one of those.
Yeah, I was one of those.
Were
guys
you the player to be named player to be named
hey,
later?
Hey, buddy, grab you. Hey, who else can we send? You. Get your stuff. Yeah, go on there. Where are we going? You're going for a trip.
Yeah.
when I got to Colorado, I was playing really well, and it looked like I was going to actually get the chance to start when we had the season opener and stuff, and then, you know, go to turn just a basic routine ground double play. And just Boom. Threw the ball, and I just felt my arm just... It felt like it was hanging about 4 feet down, but I mean, obviously it wasn't.
Yeah.
But it was throbbing, and I was like, what the hell, man? I've never felt anything like that. And went in, get a cortisone shot, come out feeling pretty good, finish the game. By that night, man, I wanted to cut my arm off.
Yeah.
I mean, I was hoping, please.
What year did you go in? Into what year did Oakland sign you?
90.
90? Tail end of it, don't name names, but what was the drug use like in minor league? Because I mean, the real powerhouses were late 70s, early 80s, and I forget who it was. One of the who was it? Used to slide. He used to have to go in sliding head first because the
Ricky
glass
Anderson?
Vial in his pocket he didn't want to break. I forget who that was. But what was it like? Was it pretty prevalent?
It's not real open. I mean, you know, obviously the players don't go around with an open book on who's the drug users and stuff. But I mean, it's real easy to figure out when you got guys that huddle up together and are doing stuff that's not normal. But there was a lot, and there wasn't even a drug policy back then. So Cocaine was a very free used drug for by a lot of players.
In another life, in another career, I took trips through several locker rooms back in the early and mid '80s, and it was like the back room at Studio 54.
Is this something we need to talk about, Matt, in a therapy situation?
No, I was.
All right.
I wasn't delivering. I was. Okay. I partook several times, but yeah, it was flamboyantly open, just out there.
The players that had the money that did that, they like Barry Bonds. I mean, not that he did drugs, whatever. he was a big high dollar player. Yeah. He was sponsored promoters. I mean, he was money to
it's investment. MLB. If you don't perform, not just your paycheck, not even your family, you've got an entourage of agents, lawyers, management.
Which is why he never got in trouble for the steroid use.
Single him out. I mean, it was, mid-'80s through the mid-'90s. Oh, it was huge.
Even A-Rod right now. Yeah. I mean, nothing against the guy. He's a phenomenal athlete. But why is he still chasing home run records?
Yeah.
If he was suspended all last year for performance-enhancing drugs, why are they not taking away the home runs when he was on the performance-enhancing drugs? But they're still leaving them there. Yeah. So, I mean, what good does it really do?
Because you can only have so many asterisks after every record.
Yeah. Before it looks like you're being cursed out. Home run.
Asterisk, a pound sign, an exclamation point.
Exclamation.
An at, an ampersand.
Yeah.
So you come out, your shoulder's blown.
I was ready. I mean, the day they gave me my release, I was relieved. I mean,
really?
Honest to God, I was thanking the Lord, man. I was like, I knew I was done, and I was ready. I was ready to just.
You've seen too many, bus seats
and you can't get
and
that
Motel
much,
Sixes.
You don't get that many drugs anymore. The cortisone and all that stuff.
You're just masking
you have to deal
at
with
that
it.
Point. Yeah.
And I was done. I mean, some days I could warm up. I'd warm up pretty good, take the first ground ball, and just be dying.
Now that's. In professional athletes, like you're saying, that this is because this is the living of not just the guy, the girl, even the team. It's sponsorship needing to fill seats. It's so prevalent. Dan, we were talking about that the other day, just because you've with your medical background, seeing the way pharmaceutical companies are really a driving force in this country. Does that surprise you? As far as the way things are handled on the medical side of pro sports here in the States?
Yeah.
The
whole healthcare system here surprises me. It blows me away.
And we asked about the performance enhancing for Europe and the UK specifically. But as far as just the way they treat their athletes on the physical side, are careers just as long? Are they shorter? Are they longer for athletes, pro athletes over there?
I think I can only speak for football because I played semi-pro football over in England. I can only speak for football. Football now, people they are playing longer than what they used to. So it's not uncommon now to find a goalkeeper 47, 48 years of age. It's not uncommon to find a striker, a centre-forward playing at the age of 40.
When you say longer, that means that they actually play the second half like you did.
Yeah, that's right. I would make
minute-wise,
20 minutes,
What accounts for that? Is it just smartness and conditioning and taking care of yourself?
Yeah, fitness, training, diet, the actual training regime now that they have, and the science, the sports science, more knowledge about sports science.
Athletes more than anything.
Well, talk about that a little bit. Specific to baseball.
Especially Bo Jackson. Players like that are maxed out in their physical ability and size and everything.
Incredible.
I mean, they keep themselves. I mean, you look at guys nowadays. I mean, the baseball players now are 6'4", 240, same as quarterbacks now. The athletes, they work out nonstop. I mean, they got these horrendous workout schedules all day. Keeping massive calories in their system, keep their weight up. I mean, they're working out so much that their muscle tone actually has no growth left.
Hmm.
They're maxed out. Eventually, and sooner than later, you're going to pull a muscle.
More strength than athleticism, you think? Yeah.
I mean, you have to have some room for your muscles to actually expand and grow.
Yeah.
If you're maxed out and you're working that stuff out to where you're just rocked out, they have nowhere else to go but to be pulled or torn or.
Yeah.
And I guess that's different in football because you don't need to be that big. You know, you better be an agile and slimmer and
almost,
you know, smaller,
like a basketball body style.
Even
basketball, same thing. These guys are massive compared to what we used to see in the Rick Barry days. You know, in the
you see them on TV, that's nothing. You see them in person, you're like, holy crap!
Now. Baseball wise, there's always the comparison. Like we were talking home run records. Well, now it's an expanded season, the expansion leagues and the expansion teams, and people say, well, you can't compare a 2015 ball player to the Mantles, Marises, or go back, DiMaggio and Gehrig and those guys, because of the way the game's played and conditioning and all that, but this is my loving to eat pizza and hot dogs mentality is the way I see it. The way those guys played back then when, Babe Ruth in the dugout guzzling beer and hot dogs and then putting it down so he can go and smack one.
Yeah.
It's almost a better skill in my eyes because now one player will have a training staff of 5, 6, or 7 directing every step that they take, he or she takes, and nutritionists and conditioning coaches and strength coaches and all this stuff. It's a whole team around one player. Yeah, the numbers better be more. Yeah. You got 6 guys working instead of 1 guy in the hot dog vendor.
What's funny is it took however many years for someone to beat Babe Ruth's record, and Hank Aaron and Lou Gehrig and Iron Man, all that stuff. It took many, many years for that to happen. And the guys that actually set those records played for the love of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, they got rewarded well. I mean, they lived a good lifestyle.
But they all had jobs on the offseason. They were laying bricks.
Yeah, they were not these high-dollar athletes. I mean, and they didn't have these strenuous workout schedules and all that stuff. They just went and played the game.
Yeah.
They went, they did their calisthenics, whatever they did, and they played the game, and it seemed like their careers lasted longer. Yeah. And it took all this time for these guys and working out, adding
enhanced
40 pounds,
balls, the
everything else
tight
for them
around
to beat
balls,
the records that those guys set.
Yeah.
And it amazes me that shows you how talented those guys really were.
In England, there's a game called Rounders. It looks a bit, it's like your baseball.
And
it's the girls.
In America, they call that the clap.
The girl. It's the girls that play Rounders. So I guess it's kind of similar to
sure
to what you guys
play chess,
yeah, and drafts.
So what'd you do after baseball? 4 years, you're ready to quit. You've had your fill.
I did exactly what I was told not to do,
which was
got into insurance and got into car sales. So they told me, whatever you do, don't get into insurance or car sales. They take ball players and try to use them for promotional stuff and you won't get anywhere, and it's the truth.
Somebody they can dance around money.
They put you in the limelight and they're collecting the dough, and I actually did get this was probably the coolest job I ever had in my life. I was Spider-Man for Marvel Entertainment for the promotionals for Spider-Man 3 when Spider-Man 3 was coming out. So I would put on the suit. They would send. Well, I wouldn't put it on first. They would send me wherever they needed the promotional to be.
You didn't travel,
in
the suit. No, you didn't put it on.
Yeah. I was just sitting there, like, freaking out on an airplane.
I don't think that Sky Marshal's undercover.
But what's funny, that suit, I kid you not, you put that suit on and you have more power than anyone in the world.
No, how'd you get into that? What was the...
Another internet thing, I just applied for it. What's weird is they asked to send them a picture in your underwear.
Yeah.
To see
your body
physique.
Style, yeah.
And I was like, that's kind of weird. I got 100 of them. Which one do you want? I was like, that's weird. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find one with me
come
with
on
underwear on.
Come on over and trace it.
Yeah. I don't have a zoom lens like or a wide angle. That was when original selfies became
was that
born.
Ad on a bus bench or yeah. did they
yeah idiot supply here.
It was in the back of this magazine that I got in a
Hustler.
Brown paper bag.
Hustler. Yeah, put on this costume
with all these entertain. English football players yeah. in it. I don't understand.
Playing chess or whatever. When I talked to them about the job, one of the first questions they asked me too is, "Do you get excited easily?" I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm thinking like I didn't understand the question. Excited, like, you know, just get
Whee!
Yeah, lose my temper or something. I mean, what,
I got easily elated.
They're like, no, well, you're going to be wearing spandex, so. Do you get excited easily? I'm like, well, what are they going to be doing to me?
Well, let's see. Yeah. I answered this ad on the back of a bus
yeah.
bench.
Yeah.
They sent me this blue and red tights, and I'll be at children's birthday parties. I'm going to say no.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Nope, don't get excited at all. So did you say children?
So where did they send you? Where were some of the places you went?
Actually, I went to Chicago. I did a big mall thing there for promotional. Yeah. Went to several Walmarts across the United States, St. Louis, Denver. Superstition Springs here in Mesa was actually the number one Walmart in the nation selling Spider-Man paraphernalia.
Really?
So, and I would go to 4-hour shows.
All because of Joel Coops.
All because of the Coops.
All because of his excitement.
And his expandable spandex.
Do you tuck? I don't know. Yeah, my web slinger was messing with my web dinger. I'll tell you that. It was weird, though. I mean, I put that suit on, and I had parents pushing their kids out of the way to get their picture with me. Wow. I'm like, what are you doing,
what
man?
What did just by putting the suit on without even mentally preparing, what did it do to, say, your walk? And I'm asking for a specific reason. Did it change the way you carried yourself?
I don't really think it did. It just felt weird, you know? Yeah. I mean, I can't recall, like, waddling or, you know, walking a little more open-legged or anything like that. I just it just felt weird. I mean, and I'm not a guy that likes to expose himself and all that. Hey, hold on. You know, and do that stuff.
We'll take a break while he puts his pants back
on. Yeah, the New York cheesesteak sandwich right there. So I'm kind of shy in that way. And so putting that thing on, I was a little, you know, intimidated and
the
stuff.
The reason I can't remember who it was. This is years ago. I was watching an interview of an actor. And I, for some reason, I want to say Tom Cruise, but I don't think it was. And the host was asking this actor, how do you get in mindset for roles do you do a lot of research? And I don't remember who the actor was. He says, it's all in the shoes. He says, what do you mean? He goes, if you're going into a cowboy role, you get on a pair of cowboy boots, and you automatically start feeling that way.
Yeah.
When you put on a you know, $500,000 pair of wingtips that are high polished because you're playing a Wall Street exec, you start to feel like that. It's all based in your shoes. You're playing a biker, you slap on some motorcycle boots, and you get that feeling.
You get into
like
character,
yeah. Yeah, and he said it started with his shoes, and I know just from my growing up and playing beer league softball and stuff, you see these guys, myself included, who are uncoordinated and weekend warriors at best. You strap on a set of cleats and put a glove on your hand, and you start getting the mannerisms of a ball player that you see on TV. Yeah. You know, scratching inappropriately and all that good stuff. But I was just wondering, you're literally immersing yourself in Spider-Man from head to toe. I was just wondering if it changed how you carried yourself.
It does when you're on the set and you're actually doing the show. You become Spider-Man because
that's interesting.
You play the character, and they want you to be able to answer every question. You know, if people ask you questions about anything, you have to be able to answer.
You know, a little backstory.
Yeah, you have to be Peter Parker.
Cool.
And it was weird because you do get caught in character, which is a good thing because, I mean, that's the only way to really make it believable. But what amazed me was how the adults were just as mesmerized by my presence as the children.
See, that's...
And it's like they know I'm an adult in a costume. I'm not really Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But it I had two women fight to get their picture with me.
The 50s and 60s, Spider-Man. Everybody grew up with
him. Peter Parker, he was 5'10", 165 pounds. Dark hair, hazel eyes. Imagine that. Guess what? I'm 5'10". I'm about 170 now.
Is it really Peter Parker?
Yeah.
It is. I think it is. Where's your camera?
Yeah, it is. I can't say that because I'm in the witness protection program.
But that has to do with the spandex and the excitable at children's parties. Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do.
I wouldn't even have thought about that until they said that. And then I started thinking, that wouldn't be good, you know, to be somewhere in a mall with children and Spider-Man arrested today. As they're taking me out and got an extra leg on myself. You know, I was like, that wouldn't be good. I had married women coming up to me with their husband standing there going, as they're giving me their number. I had gay guys bring me flowers and candy. Nobody knows what I look
and
like.
And that's how you met Dave.
You like candy.
And that's how it turned pink. And now I've got to find out how it turned purple.
And now you guys are going off to San Diego together. That's so right. It's, you know,
he's
San
got Francisco. Purple balls.
So you've got... years just bouncing around, finding jobs where you can, insurance.
I think that's really why I became a comedian. It was because it's the only thing you can do where you don't really have to have a job, and you can tell people that they'll think it's cool.
So you started about 6 years ago.
About four. Yeah.
Four?
Yeah.
Okay.
About four, seriously.
Okay, when you started really, really going after it. And you're, what did you say,
46.
46 now, so you're over 40 when you started.
Absolutely.
How do you use that as an advantage? Like we said, most guys start younger, but here
it
now
scares
you're...
Why? Because I look at Kevin Hart. I mean, you know, it took him over 20 years, and he's a little younger than I am. But I think about, okay, now if it takes me 20 years, I mean, I'll be doing it from the retirement home or out of my hover round.
But the flip side of that is now you have a whole lot, you know... More than half of your life is experience to draw from. You've got something to say.
A lot of it I don't want anyone to know. I mean, I was able to plead the fifth and get away with a lot. If I start talking about it now, I'm going
to
be in trouble.
Well, how would you, and I hate to ask because it's kind of a hacky interview question, but what do you style, how would you describe your comedy?
You know, that is a good question because I don't really know how to describe my comedy. It's not a blue collar, white collar.
More long-form storytelling, or is it standard?
I've got
joke,
both. I mean, I've got you know stories of life that are obviously long-form, but basically, like I'd say, like a surrealism, you know, stuff that fantasy, real-life stuff, you know, that could happen. Things
just your weird take on stuff.
Just things that happen that you immediately come up with some type of response for that's hilarious. That you know, I take and put into my comedy, and it's I don't even know how to classify it. I mean, I just say it's the best there is. So come check it out.
And now your first sets with Pablo Francisco. What were you doing? 15? 5?
Actually,
10?
I don't think they gave me a time limit. I just got up there and
to warm up
stuff.
The crowd.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I did a lot of stuff just about you know sex because that's what I knew about, or didn't. That's why it was funny. And, you know, just little stupid things that I would come up with driving down the road and just threw that out there at them and it worked. I mean,
what do you got now? You got a good solid 45 or you're still building up to it?
43 and a quarter. You know, I mean, everyone
well,
jumps
42 and a half more than that. No.
You know, I actually, when I got back into it and I did the BET special, I had an hour straight comedy, a good hour set. The BET special was supposed to be 30 minutes. When I got there, it dropped to 15, then 10, then 7. So I took my one-hour set, cut it down to 30,
hold
then to
down,
15,
yeah.
Yeah, and pulling stuff out. You're like, oh, my God, I mean, how am I going to do this? And since then, I've been just piecing stuff together, writing different sets. I got, like, probably 6 or 7 different sets now instead.
And that brings this is for both of you, because I know as – and I don't – call myself a writer, but I do write for various things. Right. It's much easier to do a 1,500-word piece than a 400-word piece.
Right.
It's oftentimes a lot easier to put a Facebook post up of, you know, a couple of paragraphs, and it's a lot harder work to do a 140 character, 160 character tweet.
Right.
How do you guys do that? When you say you've got several sets, you've got a good solid hour, you've got a good solid 45, whatever it happens to be, and then you go in to a set where you're one of six and you got 7 minutes to grab that audience, hold on to them, and let them go where they're still remembering who you are. What kind of steps do you do for that?
You know, you never really know either. When you get there, I try to judge the crowd, you know, and I'll watch some of the comedians and see what their jokes are that are hitting, that the people are laughing at, because we all have similar jokes, you know, and things like that. And I mean, I've gone up on stage where I've had a pretty good, you know, 5-7 minute set, and at 3 minutes, I had them just rolling, and I just end my set right there. I mean, I just walk off because at that point, they're at the highest peak. I mean,
yeah.
Even though I'm cutting my set short, I'd rather go out right now with them remembering that and laughing for 5 more minutes than to continue and bring them down. And not really know if you're going to be able to finish that off.
You never know if you're going to be able to hook them again. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you just never know when that high is going to be. And we write our sets for the climatic, you know, climax. I mean,
yeah.
we write it for the end to finish with that big finale. But the crowds are different all the time. I mean, the same set you do at improv on a Friday night that you bombed is the same set you do on improv on Saturday night and kill it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you just have to stick with it and just pick through the crowd and see what the crowd is.
What's your technique, Dan? Or do you, it's kind of the same thing.
Football.
First, I talk so they can't understand me.
Yeah. They have no idea what
just
I'm saying.
So that hair.
I try to write it so that I have a structured set. So if I write an hour set, I try to structure it so that I can cut it off at any point.
Gotcha.
And when I cut it off at that point, that's just like Joel saying, you know, he'll do it. He'll get them to this climatic stage at 3 or 4 minutes and then walk off stage. So if I try and do it so it's 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, so that if I have to cut it to 5 minutes, then that's where it'll...
Yeah, now you guys are going right into the fire in Southern Cal specifically. Yeah. And a lot of the comics I listen to, some that I've talked to, talk about... You know, when you go to, Ohio or even here to Arizona or you know, some of the mid-country states, folks go and it's the event of going to a comedy club and they're going to see somebody, you know, feature or headline for a half hour, 45 to an hour.
Right.
And it's a, you know, two, possibly three comics on a bill. In a lot of these clubs in L.A., the Ice House Comedy Store, it could be, on any given night, can be 9-10 comics who are national touring comics, and they got to go in there, and they each get 7, sometimes 10, sometimes 15 minutes. And I've listened to some of these guys talk, and they're going, all right, I'm used to going, you know, in my head, I've got my 45, I've got my hour. And some of these guys go, you know, Ari Shaffir will go, you know, an hour and a half, you know, Chappelle's famous for his 4-hour sets. How do they boil that down? They say it's often harder to say, okay, by the time I get into, hey, how are you doing, they're giving me the light.
Yeah.
You know, how do you do that? And you're going into some clubs that are used to seeing A-list
six nights
a week. So did that change how you prepared for these shows, or are you going to go in with your set?
No, I've already got it. I mean, by the time I get up there, I'm just going to announce me and introduce me. I'll come out, and I'll just say, thank you, good night.
While they're still applauding.
Yeah. Thank you, good night. Yes, I killed it.
Yeah. Well, of course, I've got the added bonus of being a clinical hypnotherapist. So I go out on stage.
As he's going, watch the ball.
I hypnotize them, sit there for an hour, bring them out and tell them they've had a bloody good time.
They're giggling, man. Yeah. So. I get asked all the time if I Google, and I say, only when tickled.
So have you guys reworked, or is this a tour where you're going on to try some new stuff and try and hone down?
Well, I personally was going to – I've got my set that I've got now that I know will work.
Yep.
But I've written a whole bunch of new stuff just in the last couple of days that I want to try.
Yeah.
out there, you know, and not that it would be any better there than here, but I just have the stuff that I want to do, and
you're
I think this
see
is a great time
different
to do
audience.
It.
Yeah, yeah, whole yeah. different folks. Now, yeah. I know you've got a meeting upstairs or close by here somewhere.
Well, Mesa now.
What?
It's in Mesa now.
Aren't we? Where are we at?
Tempe.
I don't know where we are. Yeah.
I don't know where Mesa
Arizona.
Is. I've
we're
no idea.
We're in hell.
We're south of Anthem. That's all I know.
I don't know.
So we want to wrap this up. But and before, we've got I sat down the other day with Dan, and he gave me some info, and we recorded some promos for a show you guys are doing together. A few weeks after you get back. So let's run through that real quick. June 6th, Prescott Elks Opera House. Give me a little background on what it is, Dan. It's a benefit show.
Yeah, it's a benefit show for Tails Rescue, who rescue horses, rehabilitate, rehome.
That's rescue horses and rehabilitate.
Yeah, thanks for the...
thanks for the...
Thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem. That's what we do. Got your back.
And now I'll hand it over to Joel to tell you the rest.
No,
of it.
No, you can go and I just
translate. So June 6th, Prescott Elks Theater.
7 p.m.
7 p.m. Tickets are being sold directly
through the Elks.
The Elks. I'll slap some links on there. Okay. We've got a link to the event that you've created for Facebook. We'll share that as well. Okay. Pre-sale tickets. You can save a few bucks.
Yeah.
At the door, it's a couple bucks more. Was it 14
it's
and 16, 14, I believe?
It's 14, 16, and 25 for a box.
So we've got you headlining, Dan.
There's me and Joel. Yeah.
Both of you co-headlining. Yeah. How did you get involved with this?
I owed the mafia money.
Oh, no.
And so yeah, I got sucked in through the Kentucky Derby and through the British.
No, is that where the hypnotism came in? You got them going?
I just contacted my mates on the force and asked them who they had on there that needed some probation
who has an ankle bracelet that will allow out of Phoenix.
Out of that's the area. It, yeah.
And Adam Harding opening up as your host, as your MC.
He's hosting,
a local Prescott boy, so that'll be fun to see. Yeah. I'll be there. We'll get a chance to watch you guys at work. I don't want to keep you too long. We covered a lot. We're looking forward to hearing some stories from you guys.
Absolutely.
Of your trip through California.
Well, hopefully it won't be on cops.
Keep your shirt on. That's one way.
And pants.
What happens on tour stays on tour.
Yeah.
I don't know. Somehow it always seems to come back.
No, so, we're looking for some good stories of you guys.
We're going to attend several churches, and we'll have some good stories.
Yes, we are. We're going to go to church
this
Sunday.
They won't let me in one, I'll tell you that right now. They're like, hey, buddy, we really want to help you, but you might want to try Presbyterian.
You might go hose yourself off, then come on in.
The Church of Dan, that's where we'll be going.
There's no religion.
Anything you want to hit up before we close out? Anything that we didn't cover? No, we got it good.
Yeah, I think we've pretty much got it.
Well,
just, people come on out to the Save the Tales, and you're always looking for something to do on a weekend. This is a great event.
And through Mile High Show, we're constantly looking for posts when you guys are sharing them for your nights in and around the Phoenix area as well. So
we do parties.
Parties if you need.
Yeah, no, we don't do donkeys, but we do parties and
weddings.
Yeah, weddings. I'm willing to get married again.
If you want me
to do a wedding.
Thanks for your time, guys.
21st of May.
Stand up live.
They can come and see Joel Cooper, the Brit Comedy Doc.
June 6th, Elks Lodge.
Elks right. Theater.
Same crew.
Elks Theater.
Elks Theater.
I don't know where the Elks Lodge is.
There is a difference.
Elks Theater.
The Moose Lodge is going to come and hunt me down.
All right, guys. Hey, thanks. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thank you.
Well, that was our show. Hope you enjoyed it. I sure enjoyed talking with these two gentlemen. Again, don't forget, May 21st, you'll have a chance to see them on stage at Stand Up Live on Jefferson Street in Phoenix, participating in the New Faces of Comedy show. May 21, 8 p.m. at Stand Up Live. Visit Stand Up Live Comedy Theater on Facebook. Like their page. Don't forget to check out Joel Cooper and Dan, the Brit Comedy Doc, and The Mile High Show, all on Facebook. We are located at milehighshow.com. Please take a moment to visit our page. Send us some suggestions on guests and locations where you would like to see us record. Don't forget to visit iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Also, and give us a review. Take a moment to listen to some of our archive shows. There's some fun ones up on there.
And again, please just let us know who you would like to hear on the microphones of the Mile High Show. One of our fun upcoming events will be May 19th at Gabby's Grill in Prescott Valley. We're going to be recording live there at Gabby's with Sky Daddy Conwell, one of our local and hardest working musicians in the Prescott area. Sky is quite a character. He sat in with his partner with Arizona Territories for our debut episode back in December, and Sky will be coming on solo May 19th at Gabby's Grill, a new restaurant in Prescott Valley. They're located at the Prescott Valley Event Center. Check out the Mile High Show on Facebook for information on that May 19th show. Sit back, enjoy the conversation, then listen to Sky play a few songs and talk about the inspiration behind the writing of some of his very fun and entertaining songs that he performs in and around Prescott, Arizona. So don't forget, May 21st, stand up live in Phoenix for the New Faces of Comedy featuring the Brit Comedy Doc and Joel Cooper. And May 19th, Gabby's Grill, we're recording there at the restaurant with Sky Daddy Conwell. So we hope to see you there. There'll be some nice little perks for our listeners. We'll have some food specials, some drink specials, and maybe a few little trinkets to give away. May 19th, Gabby's Grill, Prescott Valley Events, Prescott Valley Entertainment District. Show on up. It'll be fun, and hope to see you there. Thanks for tuning in. And oh, and a special thanks to Nick's New York Pizza again for hosting us today for Joel Cooper and the Brit Comedy Doc. Thanks for tuning in.